Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I don't know if I can go, 16-year-old Marcia was telling her friend Sophie. If we're out of town and I have one of my attacks, I'd have to go to some emergency room, not my regular doctor. That would be pretty bad news. What makes you think you'd have an attack? Sophie countered. You don't have one every day, do you?
No,
but Marcia began. Well, then don't be such a wimp. Everyone's going. It'll be cool.
I don't know. I'll have to check with my folks. They're always worried that I could have a problem when they're not nearby. Makes me a little nervous, too. Wish I could just chuck all my medicines. No one else has to do this stuff. What a drag.
Can't you just forget all that for once and just come along? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teens with chronic illness? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has had much career experience with just such kids. Justin Goforth, a certified pediatric nurse, is nursing supervisor for the Hospital for Sick Children in Washington, D.C. He has worked with children of all ages with special needs for the last 12 years and also volunteers at a camp for HIV-positive children and their families. As nursing supervisor, Justin is responsible for all areas of the hospital, including the rehab unit, the preemie unit, and the medical transitional unit. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Justin.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here today.
What would you say is the biggest issue adolescents with chronic physical illness face?
I think that the real answer to that question is the same issues that any adolescents face, but with a different twist. They're facing the struggle with independence, body image issues, relationship issues, finding sort of their niche in life and who they are, identity issues. And yet they're doing that with some really special struggles around compliance with their treatment protocol, being let loose by their parents that are usually latched on quite intensely because of all the care that those children have required up until this point, and that their children are more fragile than other children. So the parents have really been very involved in the treatment of whatever their chronic illness is. And it's so hard for those parents to allow that independence that's so important in adolescence. So there becomes the struggle in the family. And I think that it really is back to the core issues of adolescence. It's just it got a different twist and it's a bit stronger, I think, for these kids.
Do these kids have a backlash against taking their medications and all that kind of stuff? Because that, in a way, represents adult authority as well.
Absolutely. I think a very normal way for adolescents to work through issues of independence and autonomy is to seek out dangerous activities, at least what their parents perceive as to be dangerous activities. This is a normal thing for all adolescents to do. It's a developmental thing we all go through. We've all been there, and we can all remember what those things were that we did. With children with chronic illnesses, the parents are a lot more protective usually. The family's quite a bit more protective, and those dangerous activities can be seen as quite extreme for these children. And dangerous activities can be noncompliance issues around their treatment protocol because they're asserting their independence around an issue that has been so controlled for all of their life as a child, that here they are now at adolescence trying to be independent, and it becomes sometimes the one issue that they start fighting on. They'd like to not even acknowledge that they have this chronic illness, and so it's a time in their life that they do start struggling with compliance around their treatment.
What common misconceptions do these kids have to counter from the world at large?
I think probably the largest misconception is that they are perhaps focused on their illness, because they're not. These children have chronic illness because of the nature of it. Means that most of the adolescents that have chronic illnesses have had those for quite some time, even since birth, many of them, in the case of HIV or sickle cell anemia or cystic fibrosis. And because they've struggled with this all their life, it is their life, that it is a part of them, and they don't understand the perspective that perhaps most adults do of not having an illness like this and therefore having to deal with it and treat it and be on top of the compliance issues. So I think the misconception is that this is sort of the biggest part of their life and that they focus on that because they don't. They're focusing on trying to be an adolescent and growing up and being independent and finding their identity and struggling with body image and relationships and that kind of thing.
How have some of these kids successfully overcome problems with peer acceptance?
The issues are, what's the chronic illness? How serious the chronic illness is? Like, asthma is the most prevalent chronic illness that adolescents face by far. And yet it's hard to compare a child with a chronic illness of asthma to a child who has cystic fibrosis, who growing up knows that they're not going to live probably past 30 or 40 at the most. And asthma is not quite the same. So it really depends on what the issue is that they're facing. But I think that many children growing up into adolescence find ways to express their needs, their concerns, their wants, their desires sooner than some children through expression, through art and art therapy, perhaps through dance, through painting, through singing. I've seen so many kids that have branched out into some really fantastic skills around expressing themselves in not so common ways because they're faced with these not so common challenges. So they start learning quite early how to express and how to communicate that with the outside world in ways that maybe other kids aren't so adept at. Many of them find ways to overcompensate and become the straight-A student, become the star class clown, and become particularly charming, or on the other end of this spectrum, try to fade away and become the wallflower that can't be noticed. And all of these are coping mechanisms that they deal with to deal with their peers, some of them healthier than others. But it's usually finding out what their skill is, what their gift is in life, and accentuating that and really bringing that out, I think, in many times more so than what we call normal children.
Do you find among children with these kinds of limitations that they are less judgmental of other people and more accepting of people with differences, or no?
Yes, absolutely. I've worked a lot with kids with cystic fibrosis. It's a really interesting phenomenon because their psyche moves through life stages much faster than children without chronic illnesses because they've been told and they understand they have a relatively short lifespan. Their psyche starts packing life stages in faster than other people. I've seen some kids that are 14, 15, 16 years old that have just extraordinary views of life and extraordinary views of diversity and acceptance and so on that other children absolutely don't have. And I would say that that's one of the gifts of chronic illness. There's a famous doctor who said the most interesting people in the world are people that have faced chronic illness because they've had to reach inside themselves and they've had to find support and find strength in themselves that other people haven't been faced with. And he said, you know, I would want to surround myself with people like this. And kids are no different. And you'll find that adolescents with chronic illnesses have special gifts, special perspectives, and are more mature in many ways than other children. At the same time, they're still a 14-year-old, they're still a 15-year-old. So you get this dichotomy of this advanced mindset, advanced social concerns, along with still trying to be a child.
This almost sounds really like a wake-up call for both parents and educators to be sure that especially kids with chronic illness, really all kids, but especially kids with chronic illness, have the opportunity to be exposed to lots of different forms of self-expression.
Absolutely.
Art and music and so forth.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things that parents can do for children with chronic illnesses is provide those opportunities. Now, that's going to be harder to do than it is for a child that we consider to be, quote, normal. But there are opportunities out there, and there are ways for them to express themselves and to get them involved in after-school activities that they can be involved in, given their limitations, whatever those limitations may be, to find that special gift, because every single child has that, every single one. No matter how mentally retarded the child is, no matter how disabled they are, no matter how serious their illness is, they all have that special gift. And I believe that it's really the parents' responsibility, especially in these children, to help them find that gift, because that's where they're going to feel like a normal person, because they get to express that and they get to share that and they get to help the world because they have this gift.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on adolescents with chronic physical illness.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Justin Goforth about adolescents with chronic physical illness. Would it help to expose them to the work of people who've had some kind of illness, or does that not make a difference?
I think it does. I think that for all children worldwide, one of the most important things that they can have is role models. And when you present a child with a chronic illness that they've lived with all of their life, with a role model from someone who hasn't had that, they're going to rebel against that role model because they're going to say, you don't understand, he doesn't understand, she doesn't understand, that doesn't apply to my life, that's not my perspective, I don't come from that, so don't try to impose that on me. And I think that in any way, shape, or form that you can provide role models from people that have chronic illnesses, disabilities, special needs, that it opens their mind to the possibilities that are out there.
So parents and teachers need to do a little homework and know a little history of some of these great artists, great writers, great musicians, and so forth.
Absolutely. Yeah, I myself am HIV positive, and I have been for many, many years, since I was in my young 20s. So I have a little perspective on what it's like to grow from young adulthood into adulthood with chronic illness, and I share that quite often with the children that I work with, because it changes their perspective on me, and it allows them to trust me more, and it allows them to give more validity to the guidance that I'm giving them, because they're like, okay, he might actually understand this a little bit. One of the reasons I share very openly with pretty much anyone my chronic illness is a statement of not having shame around that is so important. And it's so important to children because these children are all growing up with tremendous shame around their illness. And to provide the role model of saying this is not anything to be ashamed of.
What kinds of things are especially troubling to these teens?
What's troubling to any adolescent? Again, it's a different perspective. So body image is going to be especially troubling. With cystic fibrosis, for example, children are usually much, much smaller because they can't use the nutrition as the same as you and I. So they've not grown nearly as much, and they tend to be short in stature and have what we call barrel chests because their chest has actually developed physically to help them breathe better. So body image is a huge one. And then that obviously melds into relationship issues. And how do you work out having a relationship, which all adolescents are interested in, or at least exploring romantic possibilities at that age? I think that one of the ways that parents can really help children with chronic illnesses is support groups and finding outlets for these children that includes their peers, and not peers on an age basis, but other children with chronic illnesses. Hopefully, even at best case scenario, other children with their specific chronic illness. And I've witnessed this so many times in the work I've done in camps and so on. The camps that I work at for HIV children, you get this group of adolescents together, and they all know that the playing field is now level. And it's the first time in their life that they've ever experienced that. The common denominator's there, so now you can throw that out the window, and now you can be a normal adolescent. And these kids that are wallflowers and don't interact with their peers and they're shy and they're ashamed, you get them into that kind of arena and they just go nuts and they're like playing and having a fabulous time and fighting with each other and flirting with each other and doing all the things that normal adolescents do. And it's like so magical because it gives them this opportunity to just be a normal adolescent. There are tremendous numbers of groups out there for all different chronic illnesses. One of the best things that the internet has brought to us is the ability to find those kind of opportunities pretty quickly. If you go to any major search engine and type in sickle cell anemia, you can even follow that up with sickle cell anemia adolescence. I guarantee you, you're going to find resources immediately. Almost every major chronic illness has major websites now that focus on the resources available.
So even if you live in a small town, you can focus on something like that for the summer.
Absolutely. For the summer or even through the internet on a regular basis, because there would be chat groups and email groups and listservs and that kind of thing that your child could actually participate in. And, you know, a child in Washington, D.C. could get to know a child in Kansas and become very good friends. That's not something we had 10 years ago.
Justin, what turn out to be particularly good supports for kids with chronic illness?
One of the things that I think is so important in this context is that parents find support groups for themselves. And that's only going to then help them find more opportunities for their children, to find more support for their children, because the parents of these kids get very drained. If I had a child with a special need, I would want very much to find something that fills me back up on a daily basis, because my life is going to be so spent worrying about that child's needs, that child's limitations, what are they going to face, and so on. And it's so important for parents not to become drained. And those groups are out there as well.
What suggestions do you have for parents and other family members and friends as to how to help these teens?
It's very important to really take a look at the needs of the other family members, not just this child. One of the issues around children with chronic illnesses and adolescents is that the focus really becomes about this child. And if you have a multiple child family, the other children tend to get really left out. It's a really chronic problem with families, and it's very understandable. I've worked with families that just spent their lives in a hospital, basically, and their other kids come to the hospital on a regular basis, and they have to go play out in the hall or in the family lounge or whatever, and they're really getting left out on a regular basis. So it behooves parents to focus on their other children, try to find a way to normalize that family situation as much as possible. Let the other kids in the family know that they're loved just as much. And I know that that's really easier said than done, but yet it's critically important, because those children are going to also be a support for this child in the family. And if they feel left out and if they feel shunned and they feel not loved as much, it's hard for them to be a support to this child with chronic illnesses. So it's extraordinarily important that the whole family's brought in and that it's a constant area of communication in the family, and that the parents sit down with all the children and each other and say on a very continual basis, what are we dealing with? How are we feeling? You know, what happened last week? You know, your sister who has sickle cell went into crisis and she went into the hospital and she's been there for 2 weeks, and I know I wasn't available and I missed this soccer game and I missed that band practice and that kind of thing. And to say you're sorry and to talk about that, to allow your other family members to get angry. There's a lot of anger in these families, and that's totally fine and it's totally normal. It's all about how it's expressed. And if it's not expressed, that's when it gets kind of dangerous. Some of the supports that can be put in place is family therapy. I would suggest that to every single family out there that has children with chronic illnesses, to have family therapy going on, to have individual therapy for the parents, for the child with the illness, and for the children without it. If those resources are available to you, I would say have at it.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on adolescents with chronic physical illness.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Justin Goforth about adolescents with chronic physical illness.
The other thing that I'm sort of hearing in the background is that extended family could be very helpful in making the other children in the family feel valued and loved and important, and also as a cushion and a sounding board for
troubled, anxious parent.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting. I work in Washington, D.C., and our cultural diversity here is huge. So the children that I serve come from all different walks of life. And we don't have that extended family support that's quite as strong here in this country. We're so spread out across this huge, great land, and our extended families are so spread out. That's a resource that's, I think, pretty difficult for some families. One of the strongest things we can do for any human being with chronic illness, not just adolescents, is allow them to bring their gift to the world, allow them to help us out. There was an inspirational speaker I saw at one of the conferences I went to on technologically dependent and medically fragile children, who was quadriplegic, who was in a wheelchair that he controlled with his mouth. He's a PhD professor, and he has an unbelievably wonderful life that he just loves to talk about on stage and how full and abundant his life is. And he said that he was laying in the hospital bed after a car accident that caused him to be a quadriplegic, and he was very much wanting to kill himself. He was extraordinarily suicidal. He said, if there was absolutely any way that I could have moved a muscle, I would have killed myself. He said a nurse came in and was helping to take care of him, and they were doing chit-chat, and he said all I could see was the ceiling because that's all I could look at. But I heard this woman saying things to me and said, I heard that you're a psychologist and I've been having these issues, you know, kind of like those are the questions we don't like so much when people find out that you have expertise and they, well, can you give me some advice, you know, I've got this rash or whatever. So she starts talking about some issues that she'd had in her life. And he said, you know, after your shift, why don't you pull up a chair? So she did, and they did a session. He said, that's when I decided that I was going to live my life, because somebody asked me for my gift, my expertise, and my help, and I realized that I still had that. So he's an adult who knew what his gift was. These are children who are still finding that out. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, one of the most important things I think we can do for these kids is let them express their gift, because if they have a gift to give, and they do, then that's what normalizes them and says, I'm a person in this society, and I can contribute.
At this point, we have, I'm sure, a lot of listeners who are ready to write down any resource you're going to give, because obviously there are a lot out there, and that can be very helpful. So what would you like to share?
I have a couple of websites that I'd like to share. And again, in today's world, the internet is really the most powerful resource we have. Books that are written are already outdated by the time they're published, especially in the area of medicine and chronic illnesses, because the technology expands so quickly that you can't keep up with written material anymore. And that's where the internet really comes in. As new support groups, as new camps are made, as new programs, as new treatment modalities and research protocols come up and that kind of thing, all of that can be put on the internet. So I really encourage people to do searches on whatever the specific chronic illness is that they're interested in, especially around children. Just add in children or adolescents to that search and you'll find things. At the Hospital for Sick Children where I work, we have a site, and that's www.hfscsite, so it's Hospital for Sick Children site.org. And we have a resource guide, actually, that is specifically for the D.C. metro area, but there's a whole section in that guide called Associations and Organizations that have international and nationally based organizations for many different chronic illnesses. And so if you go to that website and you link to our resource section, you'll find many, many resources that are not just DC based, that are internationally and nationally based. And from there, those sites will all have links that can get you out to more specific things. There's also another one, the camp that I volunteer at has an umbrella organization called Special Love, Camp Special Love, and that's www.speciallove.org, O-R-G. And they have camps for children with different kinds of cancer and camps for children with HIV and so on. So that's a great place to take a look at some summer programs that can get your kids out in the outdoors and, again, get that level playing field, get them with other kids that understand.
What about families who need help financially with some of these kinds of resources to take advantage of a camp or take advantage of some kind of situation where it costs money?
Sure. Many of the programs are actually funded, and Special Love, for example, has no cost to the families involved, which is wonderful that they've been able to do that. And the whole family can come. All the siblings and the parents and so on get to come. And all of that is, the expenses are all taken care of with Special Love. There are many other programs that are very similar to that out there. If you have a child with a chronic illness and you're hooked into a medical facility and treatment modalities, then you also have access to a social worker. And I would find that social worker that you have access to if you haven't already. And they'll be able to hook you up with financial resources, community resources that can help you with those issues. It obviously is a tremendous financial burden to have a child with a chronic illness, even if it's just asthma, because we all know that even if you have health insurance, many of these families don't. Prescriptions are costing more and more and more and that kind of thing. So if you have a child that's on a lot of medications, absolutely the financial thing is a big deal.
Well, your being with us has been a big deal. We very much appreciate your having taken the time and sharing your expertise with us and all the listeners. So, Justin Goforth, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me. It's just been wonderful. Thanks.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 218. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with a generous grant from the Hospital for Sick Children of Washington, D.C. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.